Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This episode is part two of our discussion with Edward James, author and parent. Part one was in the last episode, if you missed it. Okay, here's part two.
Thanks very much for talking about your case, by the way. I found it really, really interesting, and I think the listeners will as well. And your outcome, just again, congratulations. It's just amazing to have come through all that and get to the stage where you are now.
Thanks.
It gives hope, and your book will as well. The stories, again, to people who are just coming into. I've said before on the podcast, I wish I knew then 4 years ago what I know now. And I think books such as yours can help people. Because also when you come into this system, and for much of the case, you can feel on your own. Mm-hmm. And so seeing somebody come through this, I think it's just can make all the difference to people, as you've described, who are in the middle of this and they're in the abyss and they feel cut off, they can feel isolated. And you mentioned also PTSD. It affects you in so many ways. And you also mentioned that perhaps looking down on a situation from a helicopter, that sort of visual technique is very helpful. And I think that's something that can help people who are not familiar with the system and may think that they're the only ones going through this, or it can seem that way. And so just any exposure you can give to these techniques and stories of people coming through it, I just think it's so valuable.
I wanted to make it, you know, it's a reasonably short book, but I wanted to make it accessible, and you know, so yeah, people can sort of get. It's not, you know, really heavy. It gets to the point, but it's the whole point of it is that, you know, this truth does come out, and you know, the positivity and looking after yourself and your children, I think, is just it runs through it, and ultimately just, you know, just being there for your kids and being able to be the best parent you can be, even after being in a pretty low situation, things will improve with time.
Yeah. And one thing that you've mentioned a couple of times and is in the title of your book is the phrase, "The truth will set you free." And that struck me because in my case, I was accused of abusing my child, and I was so traumatized by that. Also, contact was cut, another court order broken, familiar stuff to a lot of us, I'm sure. But at that stage, I was so traumatized, I went and got some sort of professional help to help me cope with the trauma. And one of the phrases that the person I consulted with said was exactly the one you've used, the truth will set you free. Now, at the time that I began seeing them, I couldn't really have confidence in that because you say, what if the truth doesn't say, what if nobody believes the truth? Luckily, in a fact find, it did come out that I was telling the truth and I hadn't done anything wrong. But there's also a similar quote from that I've quoted on my Twitter page before from Winston Churchill, that truth is incontrovertible. Panic may resent it. Ignorance may deride it. Malice may distort it. But there it is. And that's basically a similar sentiment. What made you use that phrase? And did you ever, at any point when you were in the midst of the accusations, worry that the truth wouldn't set you free?
I definitely did worry about that. And I, as you do, things you start sort of catastrophically predicting what could happen or envisaging, you know, due to the nature of these accusations, if people were to believe them, then, you know, you're talking loss of job, loss of income, yeah, loss of housing, loss of friends, loss of children ultimately. So yeah, hugely worried about that. But I think as it progressed, I knew, you know, if you're anyone and you've got some integrity about yourself, you know that, I don't know, I built up a very strong self-belief that if you just continue telling the truth and just continue, and I wouldn't let up and I wouldn't take no for an answer and I would not leave any stone unturned, that it would all unravel. And you could actually see it looking back now. You could gradually see the lies unraveling and people doubting certain versions of events, and it started to snowball where actually things were just written off at, you know, any allegations. Yeah. It was like, well, no, you've said, yeah, that already, it's not true. And even now you can still, you know, we're a couple of years on from the dark parts, you can still see the repercussions of lies where people who had believe these allegations are now coming out of the woodwork and be like, well, we know that they're not true now. And, you know, having people come to me recently and saying, you know, we've realized actually what's been going on and sorry. And so I just think I think it's a good lesson in life. It's something I like to live by. And I think that if more people did that, just stuck to the truth, sometimes it's really difficult to do that. Sometimes it's quite testing of your character, and it's not easy to always be truthful, but it's the right thing to do, and you will earn people's respect, you know, in all walks of life, as a parent, as a colleague, as a partner, if you're in work, as a leader, you know, people aspire to people want to be like strong characters that, you know, are empathetic and who can, you know, deal with situations with integrity. I think that's, yeah, it's key.
Yeah. One aspect of the family court, though, is that they write their court orders. They try to write it so that you can't talk or tell anyone about what's happened in a case. Mm-hmm. They seem to like secrecy. And I struggle with this because I don't want my child to know the gory details of what's happened. But sometimes, and the court orders, I believe, are written with that in mind, that they don't want that aired for the good of the children. But there's another school of thought in that, you know, I quote Ray Dalio, who wrote a book called Principles a lot, and he talks about an idea of radical transparency being the best thing. I don't always think it's helpful to cover up abuse for children. You know, if one parent's abusing another, I don't think it's always helpful that the children don't know about that. Because covering it up can lead to more abuse. It could lead to abuse of a child if things aren't aired. And also what you say, that in the end, the truth tends to come out anyway, even if the person being abused isn't the one to bring it out. I think children are clever and they can sense things. So if they are not told, it's something I don't know the answer to, so I'd be interested in your perspective. I can see the sense in not telling them about all aspects of the case, but also I think it can be wrong to cover up all aspects of the case, because in the end they may find out 20 years later, and or they may be hurt by an abusive parent that things were hushed up about. And so maybe there is no right answer, but the courts seem to like secrecy, whereas you're talking about the truth will come out. I just wondered about your thoughts. I don't think there possibly is a right answer, but what are your thoughts on that aspect?
Yeah, I think obviously each case has its own background and situation, and you know, a difficult thing to give one answer to. I think that if appropriate, you know, child appropriate information is given to children, I think you are going to help instill trust from a parent. Yes. More because that is a huge thing, especially when there's conflict between parents, separation. The last thing a child then needs is secrecy and not being told things. You know, when children of a certain age and they ask you flat out something, it's a very difficult position to be put in, where you some things you can't obviously can't tell them, and you'll be like, well, we can talk to you when you're a bit older, but there are some things you can say, and that will help them understand and help them deal with a situation. So I think it's definitely a compromise. I think a blanket redaction is not helpful. I think that telling everything is not appropriate. I think it has to be done very carefully, and with social services or CAFCAS, that in my position, that was done, and children were told to help them understand why decisions were made. You know, not the full extent, but some sort of brief facts that will, you know, help them get to grips with the situation.
Yeah. I remember you saying about social services explaining, and that sounds like a good thing to have happened.
Because also that with them doing that, it's coming from someone that's neutral, someone that's objective, and it's not, you know, mummy says this, daddy says that. It's, you know, and the children were given a copy of the order, and it was explained to them by CAFCAS, and you know, that, and whenever there's any kind of throwback from it, I'm like, well, this isn't me, this is your guardian that has done this, and is helping you, and you could by all means ask me questions, but it's, you know, it can never be brought back as, you know, oh well, you know, daddy's lying. Yes. Or mummy's lying. It's this is someone that's actually looking out for them and wants just the best for the children.
Yeah, actually there was a recent case with a Judge McKendrick. I don't know if you saw it was in the newspapers, where he actually wrote the children a letter explaining his order. And that was quite a good idea. I mean, I think it obviously only works if the children are old enough, but I think that was actually quite a good refreshing.
I think that I didn't see that, actually. I think that's an amazing thing to do. I think that would be hugely helpful, because when you're explaining that something's happening, why is it happening? Well, a judge has said that doesn't really mean a lot to a child, but I think if they had something tangible that they could refer back to as well, as they're older, to give them some resolution as a reference, I think would be hugely beneficial. Probably wouldn't take a judge too long to do that.
No.
If you're just trying to do something very child centric and appropriate.
Yeah. Well, hopefully things like that will happen a little bit more in the future. So the thing with the family court is it seems to reform so slowly. Mm-hmm. And they've got this pilot in three areas where they're allowing court reporters. I don't know how long the pilot will go along for, but it does seem very slow the way things change. But hopefully, the way that things are changing in the world is speeding up. So hopefully that will filter through to the family court and we can get things like that happening a bit more regularly. I think also publicised, the letter was published in national press. So that again may help you know, raise awareness. I think awareness is one of the great things that needs to happen.
Definitely. I mean, it's, you know, before being involved, I'm sure you're probably the same. You are pretty unaware of what everything entailed, and that any in these issues that happen to so many parents. I think any sort of publicity or awareness that is made of the situations that people find themselves in unwittingly, and I think it can only be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like a lot of us, we've seen friends and family members go through family court before, but perhaps, I mean, certainly in my case, I'd seen, I'm thinking about the worst case of somebody I saw go through the family court. I witnessed, it was a co-worker, and I witnessed the trauma that he was experiencing, but I didn't know the workings of the court that he was having to grapple with. And it would have been helpful. I think I've said this on social media before. I think children themselves should be educated about the family courts, because, you know, teenagers in a few years after they leave school, they may be in the family courts themselves. Mm-hmm. So it would benefit the children to know what they're going into, but also I don't think they'd believe what they were told. And so it might actually help to bring about some change. If I think in a lot of issues around the world, the children are the ones that are going, it's their world they're going to inherit. And I think that perhaps relying on people in their 30s, 40s and upwards who've been through the courts, that is very, very helpful and powerful as well. But I think also that the younger generations would help bring about change for themselves and everyone else. Everybody needs to be involved in this.
Definitely. No, I think help with some understanding, but also just people that aren't, like you said, your friend had gone through something and you didn't really have any understanding of it. I've experienced similar with people going, oh, is it all sorted now? And it's like, no, it's like nowhere near sorted. And it's just people think something is ruled and something happens and that's it. It's it's a bit of an eye-opener for people, I think. So anything that's going to help people's awareness is great.
We mentioned about court orders and family court wanting secrecy. I just wondered how you approached writing your book, because, I was criticised for talking within court orders, and I don't name anyone and I keep to court orders, but I was still criticised by the barristers on the other side for doing that. But you've written a book and other people who've been on this podcast have written books. How did you... Does your court order allow you to do that, or are you doing it within parameters in the court order?
It's basically saying not to name people in the order and go into detail of the individuals being dealt with, which I haven't done. So that is what it says, and that's that's what I've done. So and also what I have written is the truth, and it's I understand that it would be not helpful against an order to sort of name people, etc. And that, that was not my intention. My intention is to to highlight a situation and to, again, just it to be a positive message and to try and help people. That's my end game. It's nothing but that. And also, it was done for me for kind of therapy, I guess. And it was a cathartic experience. And it's actually advocated by therapists if you've been through trauma or you've been abused, is to write your experiences down. It's to help you process events. So it's been a triggering yet useful process.
Yes. Yeah, that's really interesting that you say therapists advocate that. I spoke a few weeks ago to an author who'd been through the family court 20 years ago, and he wrote a book. He didn't publish it. He just wrote it to help himself. Mm-hmm. He published it 20 years later when a friend of his went through the family court and he realised nothing had changed. I'm writing a book at the moment. I don't know if I'll publish it, but it is helping me. So did you publish the book after court had finished, or was it during?
Oh no, after. Yeah, well after. After,
yeah. 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 And I see your books. You wrote another book as well, didn't you, about parenting alienated children. I assume that was written after as a second book.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I thought that my first book was basically just a backstory and took us up to the point where everything was out in the open. The children were placed where they were best suited, and sort of ended off there. And I just, the last period of time since they've been living with me has involved a huge amount of work with them and dealing with some very tricky situations. And I just thought it would be really useful for other parents that are going, you know, are dealing with children through any situation, but particularly kids that have been alienated from them. What I found to be useful, really, just any sort of techniques that I've used or any my key things that I try and do for them to help them. So I thought, I'd put pen to paper. And again, it was to help others and also to sort of document what I've done and what I continue to do and the positive outcomes from it. Obviously, things I have tried haven't worked as well as others. But on the whole, my plan of how I'm going to help these kids and help them thrive, help them be the best they can be, has worked, and obviously is still a work in progress, but I continue to try and use these methods to their benefit. I thought it'd be good to put pen to paper and document it.
That sounds like a really interesting book, because it's a lot of people are going through this dealing with children who are alienated, but your book is coming from a parent. It's not from a psychologist or some other sort of expert who may not have lived through it. They may have a lot of experience of cases, but yours is in the words of somebody who's actually lived it as a parent. So I would think that's very interesting reading. I think I'll probably get a copy of that myself.
I hope it's an interesting read. I just think it was something that was just useful to get out there, and like you said, I've lived it. I don't proclaim to be an expert. I get things wrong, as parents do, and I've spoken to professionals, they're like, if you get your parenting 50% right, then you're doing well, and it's as like a sweeping statement. So it's just trying to highlight the positives and highlight what has worked for me. So I hope it does find some use for some people.
Yeah, that's really good how you put that, because parents can be so hard on ourselves. We used to be so self-critical, trying to be, you haven't done this as well as you can. And to hear that say, oh, so you're doing better than 50-50, then you do that. Better than 50%, that's pretty good. Because I think there's some of us, if we're not 99%, then we say, oh, we could have done better,
Oh, exactly. And I think that's also echoed when I've spent time with other families, and you can see how they're looking after their kids. It's like, wow, actually I'm doing quite well. And and also being there for your kids, but you're their parent, you're not their best mate, who you are, you are obviously friends with your kids, but you're there to be their parent fundamentally. And it's having that, having a laugh with them, but overarching, you are the parent, you are the boss of the house, and you're there to help them grow into adults. And I think it's not losing sight of that, because I think a lot of people that's where potentially it goes wrong. But yeah, anyway, again, it's all my, just my experience, my thoughts. I'm not a professional, but I found my techniques helpful.
Yeah. I think the fact that you're not professional and you're a parent talking as a parent is, it's the key selling point, a key value, really. I think a lot of parents would be attracted to the book for that reason. It's probably spoken, I'm guessing it's written in a sort of language a parent would understand rather than some sort of abstract, psychoanalytical.
It's very, very, very easy to follow. It's literally in points. It's small sections on each areas that I've sort of addressed. So yeah,
yeah. I find I write a little bit that way. Just having had to write court papers for the last 4 years, you end up writing in small numbered paragraphs.
Oh man, yeah. No, I know. it does change you, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, it does. So with your books, they're on Amazon, and I just wondered, have you got I know they're printed and Kindle versions, have you got audiobook versions or are they?
It's just Amazon on Kindle and printed paperback at the moment. So you can just search my name on there. That's where they're available at the moment.
Yeah. And did you, a lot of people have stories to tell, but they might not feel they have the skills to tell them. Did you have any background in writing, or did you start from scratch and have to work it out?
I have a GCSE in English, but apart from that, no, nothing. Yes. I am not a writer, haven't done any writing, and it's... But I really enjoy it. I find it satisfying, useful, good for the brain. And hopefully if it can help a few people on the way, then that's an absolute winner. So, I think I will continue to write. I've got a third book planned as well at the moment that I've just started to look at sort of men's mental health, men's physical health, and also sort of financial fitness. So that will be my next piece.
Okay, that would be interesting to hear more about that when it comes out. What is, for anyone who's trying to write their story, do you have any tips for them, or what was your writing process? Did you do it every day for a set amount of time, or just as and when?
I'm quite self-disciplined, and I would kind of set aside some time, but I'd also... Some days I'd be in the mood for writing, other days I wouldn't. You've got to kind of just listen to how you're thinking and how much capacity you've got, especially if you've got kids around. And so it was kind of picking your moments. But some days it would really flow, other days not so much. I would try and do a few hundred words a day if I could. But everyone's different. I wouldn't have any particular tips. I think that just speaking, if you're writing about your own situation, just speaking from your heart and speaking openly, I think is really refreshing. And I would recommend it to anyone, even if you're not writing a book, just write stuff down. Actually physically rather than typing actually is quite good, putting pen to paper, because you've got more of a connection, I feel. I've done a bit of both, and I found pen to paper often is, you feel like you're actually putting something out there. Journaling is, I'm a big advocate of journaling. I would do that when I've had chronic insomnia because of the situation, and have a journal by my bed and would wake up and start writing down problems or things that are on your mind. And then it's, you can sort of transfer that out of your brain. So for anyone that's struggling, I think writing is a newfound really helpful tool for me.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that your book was fairly short and an easy read. Now, court cases, as you've described, are not short. They're not easy to read. How did you distill a multi-year court case into a short book that's easy to read. Because I think often I mean, I've heard Apple say this with their products, it's what you don't say or what you don't do that is the important bit. So how did you decide? I'm assuming you've left out quite a bit or simplified.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
I had a beginning point that I wanted to start at, and then a clear ending, and I wanted to give the reader a overall picture of the situation in a realistic time frame and chronologically correct. I didn't go into too much detail for obvious reasons, but it's very clear to see what has happened and the progression of the situation and how it's become from very dire to now quite positive. And I think that was my main message. So it was, because when I started writing, I thought, right, I could get right into the nitty gritty but I didn't think that was actually going to be really helpful. I wanted to just make it more of an overall picture that was going to be easy to digest, because it's not easy reading some of it. I say it's an easy read, but the subject isn't particularly great. But overall, the right thing happened. So that's why I didn't want to brush over the important bits. But again, it's playing that sort of happy medium of getting the information there, but not going too deep.
Yeah, I think that's a real skill. So I think not everyone can do it, and I'm not sure I can. So I think that's a really good thing if you've got that ability, because it also helps to communicate. If you don't go through that step of distilling things into a clear, concise way, people might not get through the book. It's a really important point of communication. So I think, I wouldn't. That's not to be minimised in any way, that the ability to do that. Where can people find out more about you and your books? For example, do you have a website? I know your books are on Amazon. Or do you have social media accounts that people can find?
Yes, I don't have a website at the moment, but I'm on Twitter and Facebook. They're the only platforms I'm really on at the moment. You can find me on there. Just look for my name. And I think I try and post positive information that's going to help people. And I'm more than happy to, to speak to people via messaging and to sort of, again, do what I want to do, is to reach out and offer support to people as someone that's been through it, not as a professional, as someone that's just a survivor, for lack of a better word. So that's where you can find me.
Fantastic. I think professionals definitely do have a place, but they shouldn't be the only port of call. I think people, as you say, that have been through the system can provide perspectives that professionals can't. So I think it's a wonderful thing that you're out there trying to help people. You're telling your story, as I say, raising awareness and reaching out and helping people is so important. And thanks for doing that. Thanks very much for joining us today, Edward. I really appreciate it. It's been really interesting talking to you and hearing about your story and your books. And thanks very much for appearing.
No, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And hopefully I can help people and, help people sort of find their way through things to a, more positive future.
Great. Okay. Thanks. And congratulations again on the outcome of your case. That's really wonderful. You've got the hard work to do now, the parents.
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Cheers, Edward. Bye.
Thanks, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.